The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
It's All-Ireland Final Week. Anything to say, boys?
No, it's great to be here. It's great.
How would you stop?
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Yeah, Kieran McGarry, potentially Footballer of the Year as well. That's a conversation we can begin having. Maybe Niall Morgan is in the shout for that as well. Anthony Moyes is with us. Good morning to you, Anthony. How are you?
Morning, gents. How are we doing?
Who is the Footballer of the Year? Nice handy question to get you going here.
You always like to spring one of these on me, Ger. I think Myler has to be in the mix. You know, people probably won't give him the plaudits because he's not probably getting on the scoreboard an awful lot, but he's been a guy who he's been their go-to guy to take out, you know, one of the main opposition's leaders and their main threats. And he did that again at the weekend with Durkin. You know, he was phenomenal. He obviously did it against Kerry too. So he's definitely in the mix. You know, I think McCurry, I think, deserves an awful lot of plaudits because, you know, he's a guy who probably went through a period where he came on the scene, you know, with a burst and, you know, was very, very dangerous, but then was in and out of the team. And you know, he cut a very frustrated figure for a while. I don't know if you remember, but there was a period there where, you know, Mickey Hart was trying lots and lots and lots of different, connections up front, especially in the full forward line. And lads were getting whipped off, you know, at halftime and even before halftime. And you could sense the level of frustration in that forward line because things weren't clicking. And I know he even spoke about it, that he went off himself and he had to find the Dazzler or whatever he calls himself. So it's interesting, you know, because he came back and he's been phenomenal this year. You know, very, very confident. He stands over a free kick. I was in at the game and I was chatting to the guy beside me. I was just saying, there's a massive confidence in the rest of the Tyrone players. They all turn around, they walk away. Like, literally, it's from wherever there's a free, it's going to go over. You know, he has such a nice style. He's massive confidence. And obviously, he scores 1-4 in an All-Ireland. That's not bad going.
Yeah, and I think, actually, this is one of the other aspects of it. Talking to a Tyrone supporter in the aftermath of the game, I was like, oh, it's a big change from last year. And the Tyrone people, certainly the ones that I was talking to in the aftermath of the game, were full sure that there was still a lot of Mickey Hart in that team. I'm not as sure about it as they might be. And I don't know, obviously there's an intense loyalty to Mickey for what he did over that period of time. But stuff like McCurry, stuff like the absence of an out-and-out sweeper is actually a transformative thing for the individuals, where there's clearly confidence instilled in the players. You know, we trust that you're going to be somebody who's vital to us. We're not going to take you off when things go wrong. We're not going to take you off the freeze if you miss one or two of them. And then not having a sweeper is like, we trust you as defenders. And you have to be the one who's going to be responsible, as opposed to looking for one of your mates to come and rescue you. It's just, they're small and they're subtle differences, but they're hugely important at the end of the season.
Massively, massively important. And I think it's, you know, I heard Colin Kavanagh talking there last week about the fact of the change. And I heard a lot of debate post the game of, well, you know, have they changed much, you know, since Mickey Hart's time? And I think they've changed a massive amount. As a matter of fact, in a very, very short space of time, and in an even more confined space of time due to everything that's gone on with COVID. So they've had to make these alterations very quickly, and they've had to make alterations post the Kerry game, because even Dewar referenced that Kerry game, the league game again, at a very, very important time, he referenced that game on Saturday evening. So that game had a massive imprint on what they did this year and how they viewed what they were going to do going forward. You know, I spoke to Enda McGinley about this. He felt that they were trying something in that Kerry game and it just didn't work at all. And they kind of went, right, okay, well, where we're parking that, we're not going to go there. Of course, there's still an imprint from Mickey Hart's time. You know, there's still an awful lot of players, obviously, who were there from Mickey Hart's time. So you're not going to completely rip everything up overnight. And there was no need to do it. But certainly the sweeper had to be taken out. And it was interesting, Colin Kavanagh talking about it, because, you know, predominantly he was the one who was obviously employed in that position. So when you're playing that sweeper system, and if you remember Tyrone, what they would do is they'd obviously get the bodies behind the ball, they would try to snag you, and then they would look to break. There's a subtle difference now in the sense of they're tagging men as they come back, and they're applying a lot more pressure around the middle third of the field. They're also trusting themselves, as you say. They're trusting themselves to be one-on-one. That full back line have no problem being one-on-one. You know, like Hamsey has had no issue taking on some of the best lads one-on-one. And they're comfortable with having their buddy beside them and saying, listen, if it's two on two in here. We'll take that. We don't need extra protection. So that, of course, affords you to allow players to be further up the pitch. And of course, it affords you to have more forward threat when you get the ball and have more energy. And, you know, ultimately, I think that's the key difference to what Duher and Logan have brought to this team.
It's interesting, the cliche about Tyrone, Anthony, was that they love being an underdog. They love being written off. And I kind of thought that they weren't being written off whatsoever before the weekend, except for one area, which was Mayo are going to win the midfield battle. There's no chance that Tyrone are going to win the midfield battle because of what happened to them in the semi-final, that they won in spite of the fact that Niall Morgan's long kickouts weren't doing any damage. As it turned out, his long kickouts in the All-Ireland final all of a sudden did massive amounts of damage. So that Tyrone midfield, not just the middle third, that midfield, how impressed were you with their emergence as real top-class stars on Saturday night?
Well, I think, you know, we spoke about this prior or post the Kerry game. Like, I didn't think he would be under the same pressure because Ruan and Loftus are more... They're not your classic old-style midfielder to say David Moran is, as in a big man who's able to go up 6'4" and he's able to catch ball and he's able to put massive pressure across that middle, that whole middle section of the pitch. You know, they're kind of more half-forwards. Ruan's a bit bigger than Love, but they're kind of more of a half-forward, very, very mobile, very able to go at you, you know, pick up ball and run at you, rather than being really dominant under a high ball. So when I looked at that kind of Mayo team, I said, you know what, I don't see many fellas who are going to go up and fetch ball over the two boys who are in the Tyrone panel. And what they learned was, and if you watch it, they look for a lot of tap-downs overhead, tap-downs to fellas coming running. And they essentially took that kind of, you know, that contest out of the game. Most of the big moments came from a situation where Morgan was under pressure on a short kick out, and he was confident enough that he was just going to letter this ball 60 yards and let them fight for it. And actually, Mayo men, if you watch it, got caught in front an awful lot of the time, where they were kind of backpedaling, you know, under a lot of pressure, and Tyrone guys were in behind, knowing that he has the ability to go that long. So, you know, it's interesting, as you say, Owen, there was that feeling that, you know, his kickouts would be under pressure, but he wasn't at all. You know, I was in there, I was on the lower Hogan, I was at him at first, I had a brilliant view of his ability to pick out guys, and he never, ever once was under pressure, in my view. Like, I mean, certainly his exterior didn't show anything as regards him being under pressure. You know, he was well able to ping ones out to his left when he needed short. He was well able to, off the outside of his right boot, put them out over to the sideline. But I also thought Mayo made it relatively easy for him on a lot of the kickouts. And I just think I think they thought what was going to happen against Kerry with his kickouts would happen again. And I think they planned for that. And I think they got a little bit caught out by it. They allowed players... Essentially, they seemed to be allowing a plus one to happen and had more players in around the middle section, and they were allowing easy kickouts to happen, especially out to Morgan's right. Invariably, a half forward would come down and there would be a bit of confusion and he'd just pop it out and they'd start their attack. The two midfielder, I have to say, they absolutely emptied themselves. They were brilliant. They broke up attacks. I think it was Kirkpatrick, I think, it was actually Brian Kennedy who got an early yellow, and I was a bit worried for him. I thought it was, you know, it was rough enough yellow, and I didn't think he'd last, but he had a phenomenal game. So, it was certainly a section that I think they dominated. But it's interesting to hear, Owen, and I think this thing is an amazing thing. You'll probably slip into the Mayo stuff on this as well, but it's interesting to hear Tommy talking to McGeary there, and he mentioned identity, you know, and he said, we have an identity, he said, and we were reminded of that. Now, if you want to go with identity and you want to talk about Tyrone, well, even more so than Peter Canavan, who I think was just an unbelievably phenomenally talented player, the man who epitomised the identity of Tyrone in those 2000s was Brian Duher. You know, he was a fella who, when we played them, we earmarked him as the guy just to take out, more so than Kavanagh or anyone. He needed to be man-marked throughout the game. He was the beating heart of the team. You know, not a very, very big man, not a very, very fast player. Like, I mean, you wouldn't be putting him at the kind of 9 out of 10 in anything if you were putting the characteristics of a Gaelic footballer up. But I tell you what, for heart, determination, and drive and ruthlessness, he was that. And McGeary, I know, said we'd keep our identity to the dressing room, but I'd say that was absolutely their identity and what they were really honing in on. And when I look at Mayo, I'm kind of going, where is their identity? You know, what if I was putting it up on the wall in three words? I still think they're grasping for that, and I still actually think that when it comes down to it, that ruthlessness, that identity that Tyrone have is ultimately what brought them across the line.
One of the things I was talking about this a little bit earlier on was the space, and I think this might feed into the point you made about Niall Morgan having somebody to kick the ball out to. Essentially, Henley stays in goals. He is a goalkeeper. You know, obviously he'll come out a little bit, but not on the press, not the way when they were down to 14 men that Cluxton came out and added a plus one to make sure that there was nowhere for Kerry to kick the ball out in the last minute of the game in the drawn game in 19. And it just seems like Ulster football is ahead of the curve with everybody else. Like, Tyrone had to overcome Monaghan, who are giving them this weird stuff they've never seen before. And it's like, just the brain power required to think about that is different from the challenge that Mayo had faced. And as a result, Mayo have been happy enough to keep Henley in goals. But certainly, you're watching it, and it's man on man the whole pitch. And Henley's in goals, and Tyrone are finding someone to kick the ball out to, even though they have a goalkeeper who has to kick the ball out to him. You're like, how's that happening? Is that a problem for the rest of the country to start thinking about and fixing immediately?
I think it's funny. You know, I often thought about this. I remember sitting down with Ciarán Maghini a couple of years ago, and we were talking about midfield and how he felt midfield was going to change from the big man in midfield of our days, when you just kicked out, lamped out the ball into the middle of the pitch. You know, and I remember he was reading Moneyball, the book, you know, when I was sitting down having a coffee with him, and I was asking him about, I'd never seen or heard about the movie, and I was chatting to him about it. So Maghini was a guy, obviously, and still is, a guy who thinks about the game, and he tries to look well ahead of where changes will occur in the game. And then I met him a couple of years later, and we were chatting about different things, and he was trying, if you remember, to play this sweeper-keeper. And he was being lambasted, actually, for it. You know, fellas were saying, what's he doing? You know, this is ridiculous. The crowd were going bananas when the keeper would come out, you know, even beyond the 21 with the ball. Imagine that. Well, now you have lads who are obviously soloing all the way up into the opposition half. And it's a player. You know, he may have number one on his back. He might have a big pair of gloves. But at the end of the day, he should have the skills and the adaptability to be able to play the game just as an outfield player. And essentially, that's what's happening. You know, I've often said myself, how many times do you really have a shot stop? You might have two in a game, maybe three. But how many times do you get the ball in your hands as a keeper? You could get it 15, 20, 25 times, especially if you're just giving a short kick out and getting it back. So essentially, you could play with a sweeper-keeper, and this is what you have going on, especially, as you say, in Monaghan. So when you look at the two teams, Ger, some of the biggest moments happened in that game on Saturday night, where one team had a goalkeeper who was absolutely adept at being able to come out off his line, take the ball on, deliver long-range passes out of his hand. If you remember the chance for McCurry, yeah, that came from him stepping out. He comes out of the pocket, he's happy, and he drills this beautiful long-range right-footed ball right down on top of McKenna, who manages to get it. Because it was on. It reminded me of the Donegal-Dublin game. But let's look at the goal situation. Like, if you remember, there was a ball put in, I think, by O'Donoghue, and he came out off his line, and there was a Mayo man about to catch it, and there was danger all over it if he caught the ball. And he came out, and he went out over the top of the Mayo man and got his fist on it. Actually, he grabbed it above him, came down with the ball, and it could have been for that chance. And then let's switch to the Henley and McShane goal. So if you go and watch that, rewind that again, Conor Myler gets the ball out under the Hogan stand. You know, he's about probably 30 metres out. And I've been here before, and I know exactly the situation. McShane makes a bit of a run forward. He doubles back and he points across with his left hand as if to put it just basically out into the D. And the ball that Myler puts in actually doesn't bring him out to the D, but means that he has to back up. And if you watch this, as the ball is kicked, Henley is actually standing behind his line on the goal line. He's not even out of the goal a little bit. He's actually standing behind the goal line. Whereas, you know, if that's Morgan, or if that's a guy who's thinking, listen, I'm actually playing more as a defender than a goalkeeper, he's probably standing outside the small parallelogram, or he's probably even 6 or 7 yards out. So when Myler looks up to even give the pass, Myler sees two against one. So he says, well, I'm not putting the ball in there. And invariably, if he does try to pass, well, then you have a man coming from behind who, by the way, if I'm a defender, I'm saying, listen, if there's anything above my head and I'm backing up, you come, you clean me, him and everything around you. And if you watch it, as the ball is in flight, of course, you know, Henley hesitates a bit. Then he goes and McShane just gets the flick on it and back of the net. And ultimately, that was a massive, massive change in the game because, you know, Mayo were coming back well into it. They had started well the second half. You'd see they'd increased their energy levels. They were chasing Tyrone down more. And they were really starting to threaten. And that was a big, big, big factor in the game. And that's even outside of, I know your point you're making, that's even outside of the rest of the game where, you know, Morgan is adding value as he's coming out as, say, a link man, whereas Henley, as you say, is basically being used as a goalkeeper. So I think most teams around the country are going to have to decide or going to have to look at it because essentially it is an extra player.
Exactly. And like, I wonder, is it just hammered home a little bit more this year, Anthony? Not so much because Niall Morgan's in an All-Ireland final, but because of the way the game has developed this year in particular, where the blanket defence has been phased out really, like quite emphatically this year, where you almost look at a game as a proper 15 on 15. It's just a collection of pairs all around the pitch. So your goalkeeper all of a sudden is the one person who's not being marked. There is no systemic defence where, you know, you've got a cornerback who can make a burst through. It is literally your goalkeeper who is the only free man on the pitch. And as a result of that, it's become the year where Niall Morgan, the possibly the best outfielder who's actually playing in goals for his county, actually triumphs.
Absolutely. Well, you know, my wife does basketball, and I was actually chatting to her about it. And it amazed her over the last number of years where she'd say, like, why doesn't the guy in goals come out with the ball? You know, and I was kind of saying, yeah, he probably should. You know, like, because he could be the point guard. You know, that's essentially it. And I think they're turning more into the point guard now. They're turning more into a person who's able to dictate. Because the old adage was, I'll let the keeper have it. Jeez, let the keeper have it. You know, he'll kick it up his arse or something like this, you know, because it was always the feeling that they were absolutely useless with the ball in hand. Well, that's no longer the thing. You know, they can come, they can deliver long passes. If you saw, he also delivered a lovely hand pass. I think, can't remember who it was to, but he popped it out over about three or four guys into the path of one of the cornerbacks who just raced down the middle of the field. It could have been Frank Burns. So once you have those skills, you know, as the opposition, you're now saying, well, what do we do? Do we leave him with the ball? Do we try and snag him? Do we try and corral him into a section? Do we just mark everybody else up and kind of say, yeah, come on out with the ball, come out 40, 50, 60 yards and slowly, you know, slowly kind of pull in on him. But if he's really, really, really good, all of a sudden he can come out those 20 or 30 yards and he can deliver a bomb, which happens, you know, straight down into the into your full back line. And the way teams are playing, if you're smart enough, what you would do then is you would run towards him as a forward unit and leave your big man or your two one-on-one inside and just let him deliver those balls. Because ultimately, those keepers are also, they're delivering a ball from an area where it can cause the maximum amount of damage. So, like, I think, look, it's a tactic that I think a lot of people will be looking at. And it's brilliant. Every year, there's always something different, you know, that everyone goes, oh, geez, we must do that. But the smart guys will obviously be thinking, okay, what do we do post this? So yeah. What do we do actually to stop this? Or what do we do to even enhance it even more?
The fear that's is manifest from Owen and from the Kerry people here is that Tyrone are here now for another decade of dominance, that they're going to be the team of the 20s as well. You can kind of see it in Owen this morning. You can see it. Eamon Fitzmaurice is this could be the start of something big for Tyrone, and they don't like it. Obviously they don't like it because there's a peculiar set of ghosts that Tyrone bring for Kerry. Are they here for, like, is this a one-off? I mean, we obviously always live in the now and go, geez, this team's going to be very hard to beat. But are Dublin looking at this? Are Kerry thinking, ah, Jesus, we had that. We were definitely able to win that semi-final if a few things had gone our way. Does the win annoy people, inspire them? If the Dubs get Paul Mannion back, are they thinking, we can have those lads, come on?
I think there's two ways of looking at it, actually. I think Owen and his kin are right to be worried because I actually think
you mean the impartial football observer, Anthony.
That's exactly it, Owen. That's exactly it. Like the rest of us, You know, it's funny. I look back on the game and I watched it again last night. I think Tyrone were very, very smart the way they played. And they got the goals at vital times. And you could say that, you know, especially, you know, nearly decisions were made for them. Like, I mean, if you look at the Henley goal, the one, as I said, we just spoke about there, the McShane one, and even the McKenna hand pass across, you know, there was always a thing what we'd say in our defence is that, you know, you never make up the mind of the forward. Don't make his mind up for him. Let him make the decision. And if you even watch that goal, lads rushed out and Henley rushed out and they made the decision. It was a brilliant no-look pass, but they made the decision for him rather than him having to make the decision. If you flip the far end, when Tommy Conroy was on the run, the defenders backed off. They kind of said, listen, if you take that bounce or extra shoulder, now we'll come in on you. But they made him make the decision. He made a rash decision, as did a number of the Mayo forwards, and they didn't get the goal. So Mayo will even look back on it and go, oh, we had chances. We had chances definitely for two or three goals. Definitely two, you know, even taking out the penalty. So could they have been there? Could they have made it a lot tighter? Could they have even won it? Yes, they could have. But at the same time, I think Tyrone were in control of the game. You know, Tyrone were shooting a lot well within. The scores they were getting in the first half seemed to come a lot easier for them. They were well able to shoot from outside the range. So if you watch them, they were happy enough to get their shooters on the outside and clip over scores rather than going into, you know, the net that Mayo would have wanted them to go into and then try to counter-attack them and get up the field quick, because that was Mayo's kind of strategy. So, you know, I look at Tyrone and I see the quality that they have. I see the leaders that they have. I see all the ability that they have. But I still think they're going to come through an Ulster Championship next year that's only getting better and better and better. When you look at Derry, when you look at Armagh, when you look at Monaghan, when you look at Donegal, like, I mean, there's teams emerging now that were kind of weaker in the last number of years, but are only getting stronger and stronger down. So they're going to have a tough spell coming through Ulster. And then also, yes, I think Kerry will look and go, you know what, for all the mistakes and all the messing and all the naivety that we had and displayed in that game, we were within, you know, a kick of a ball of bringing that game to the death. And really, you know, if we had spread the scores around a bit more and been a bit smarter, we probably should have won it. So I don't think they'd be shaking in their boots just yet. I really don't think so, Jared, to be honest with you. But there's no doubt about it that Tyrone, I think, have brought something different. But I don't think they're a team that are necessarily going to dominate for the next 10 years. Not yet.
What was your read on the Aidan O'Shea situation then, Anthony? Because I saw you tweeting about this at the weekend.
Yeah, I just think, you know, I actually thought he played quite well. I thought Mayo used him smart in the first half. They used him as a big man. Like, my team with Aidan, like, I've marked Aidan when he was a young lad, and he's a physically massive man. I probably had, I don't know, maybe 10 years on him, and I thought I would have had the strength on him. But he's a big, big man, as everyone knows. But he's also quite quick over those first 3 or 4 yards. He's well able to move. And once he has his arms out, it's impossible to get around him. So you have to allow him to get the ball or you have to foul him. So when he gets the ball, if he has runners coming off them left or right, his hands are good enough to be able to shift left, shift right, and then he has runners. Mayo didn't, they did it a little bit in the first 20, 25 minutes of the first half, but actually they started to really get it going in those last 10 minutes. And they should have had, if you remember, a goal out of it near the end of the first half. I think it was, it wasn't Hora, it was Oisín Mullen, I think, went past him, and he just slipped him a little hand pass, lovely little hand pass. But when they use him as a fulcrum, as a focal point in that full forward line, and they were able to put balls in front of him, it was working well. When they allowed him then having to try to turn, take shots himself, that wasn't great, because that's not his game. So, you know, I was very disappointed. The responsibility was on his fellow players to be able to get off him, come at angles, you know that the ball is coming in, a little slip pass, and then stick it over the bar. But it was still causing enough panic. But in the second half, they completely abandoned it for some reason. I don't know why they did it. You know, he was still winning ball in front of Hamsey. But the second half, they kind of said, no, you're going to drift out. Whether he drifted out himself, he was trying to get into the game. You would see he was trying to influence the game. He was getting on the ball around midfield. And look, Aidan is never going to be scoring, you know, 6-7 points for you. That's not the type of player he is. But I thought, you know, I thought it was disappointing for me. There was a couple, I mean, of the six forwards that started for Mayo, you know, really only two of them, I would feel, or maximum three of them played to the level that you have to play in an All-Ireland final. I think of the six defenders that started, possibly five of them played above the level. You know, Keegan was absolutely enormous. Like, I mean, just, you want to talk about players of the year, I think he has to go in there, even though he lost the All-Ireland final. Like, I mean, he was just phenomenal. Like, when they needed him, he made runs, you know, run again after again after again, just saying, give me the ball, give me the ball, I'll do something with it. His leadership was phenomenal. Like, I mean, I just to watch him, what he was doing, like McKenna, McCurry, they were both under savage pressure going after him. And especially after Tyrone had taken Durkin out, because they obviously focused on him and they said, well, we're not going to let him do the damage that he normally does. But there was a couple of other lads, and unfortunately for Mayo, and we spoke about this prior to the game again, they had zero impetus and zero threat off the bench, really, lads.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, they had no one to come in who was a full forward or a corner forward who was going to come in and score 4 or 5 points.
No.
And say, give me the ball. And unfortunately, that really told on them. And obviously, the Killian O'Connor injury was ultimately probably caught up with them.
A bridge too far, definitely. Anthony, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
No bother, lads. Cheers.
Anthony Moyes giving us his thoughts there on the All-Ireland football final. We're going to talk about the Camogie final with the Galway captain after a late surge won the game for them against the Cork side, who were dogged, and that one definitely went and could have gone either way in the end.